For those of you who haven't read it, it's a book about Norman Cousins' battle with a severe arthritic condition and how he chooses for himself to check himself out of the hospital with all our doctors and treatments and medicines and poisons into a hotel suite. And he makes some rules. The only people that can come and see him must talk only about positive things and must bring jokes and funny books and old Laurel and Hardy movies and such like. And he treats himself to laughter every day, and within 6 months he's able to walk out without any crutches or wheelchairs or assistance. Along with that, he used some vitamin C that his doctor supervised. But it was his feeling that the laughter itself was healing, and that after a good belly laugh, he could sleep pain-free for longer and longer periods of time, up to like 4 hours. Since then, there's been some research done about the therapeutic effects of laughter. A man named William Fry, who is a physician at Stanford, has done the most scientific research in terms of laughter. He's found that laughter is one exercise that affects almost every system in your body. It changes your respiration, it changes your blood pressure, your pulse, your circulation. It changes your muscles. If you notice, when you're laughing really hard, you move all your muscles and your stomach hurts and the tears come. It really is like an internal juggling. They've measured the oxygen content in the blood vessels that carry oxygen, and they found that before and after laughter, the hematocrit or hemoglobin level rises. And they think maybe this is one way that laughter will help people to heal themselves quicker. Laughter also helps to build bridges between people who are involved in a conflict situation and diffuse a real tense situation. So tonight we decided that we need a big injection of playful spirit while we're here building our spirituality and our intellectuality and our physicality and all the other parts of ourselves. So we have asked Paul Witt to lead us in some humorous sharing.
Lead is the right word. I feel a lot like Norman Cousins, I guess. The first time I came to Holden was 23 years ago, and I locked myself up in a room with the gentleman on my left and have for a lot of years, and instead of vitamin C, it was popcorn, and I've been cured ever since. We're going to entertain ourselves, all of us, I hope. I hope you all have good stuff. If not, Wes has got about 90 minutes worth.
You better have something.
I'll start with a real, I guess, some ground rules. Let's not have ground rules at all. Other than, I don't even want to say good taste. That's all our jokes, right? But that's, we certainly are all sensitive to things that can be derogatory to people. And that's one of the side effects of not only humor, but all kinds of language. Humor can have its bad side, so let's play with the good side of humor tonight. Wes taught me a really strange joke, and I'll let him tell a couple here in a second, and then others can jump in after. But the one I remember that I still have been thinking about for years, and maybe some others have understood this, I still don't. Three people walking down the road, each one had a brick. Remember this story, Wes?
Sure.
The first one had a red brick, the second one had a white brick, and the third one had a blue brick. First one threw the red brick up in the air, it came down, they caught it. The second person threw the white brick up in the air, it came down, they caught it. The third person threw the blue brick up in the air, it didn't come down.
Okay! Carson gets laughs with the
There was a woman singing in the choir in the balcony of the church, and the sermon was quite long, and she fell asleep. Willie told me this one.
Speak up.
A little louder, please. And she fell asleep. And in the balcony, the lady fell asleep in the balcony. And so then she fell over the side and she grabbed the chandelier swinging in the breeze. And the petticoat was showing. And the preacher said, "He who looketh shall be struck blind." And the man covered one eye with his hand and shouted, "Preacher, I'll risk one eye."
Things are named after a famous Chinaman.
Yes, his name was Gay Lee. He had a mine in an accident up in the
mine. Oh yeah, they dropped the piano down the mine shaft.
Yes, and they got an A flat minor.
Okay, let's see some of them. Someone have? Let's get us rolling. Okay, who's got one? Oh, Wes, we're in trouble. We have one up here.
I've got a story about Sven and Ole, except Ole, he's not in this one. Well, one time Sven, he was going to have the job of tearing down the old outhouse, and he was not looking forward to this one bit because it would be a lot of work for himself. He would have to take all the old outhouse down and wash it and put it back up. And well, he was a tinkin' and a puzzlin' and trying to come up with a way where it wouldn't be so much work for himself. And finally, he come up with an idea, and he tinked to himself, "If I just blow up the old outhouse, why, it'll only be half of the work." So he go into town and he buys 4 sticks of dynamite, and he come back and he put 1 stick of dynamite in each corner of the old outhouse, and then he's laying the fuse. Then wouldn't you know, Grandma, she come out of the house, and there do you think she heads but straight for the old outhouse? Only Sven, he don't see her. And Sven, he light the fuse, and pretty soon, kablooey, things are flying here and things are flying there, and Sven, he realized what has happened. He is so worried. His grandma all right, but thank heavens, not even a scratch on her. And as soon as the dust has settled down a little bit, Grandma, she looked around and she say, "Oofta, sure I'm glad I didn't do that in the house."
Ole and Lena were just married, and
they were on their way to Brainerd for their honeymoon. While they were in the car, Holy reached over with his hand and put his hand on Lena's knee. And Lena smiled a big smile and she said, Holy, they're married now. You could go farther than that. So Holy went all the way to Duluth.
Second marriage story. That Ole and Lena.
After a meeting tonight.
And you see, Ole died. And Lena has the funeral director out at the house, and she says, Ben, you know, you've been married for 50 years, and I'd like to have him buried in the backyard. And he says, I don't know if we can do that. I said, I don't know if you can do it, but I want it done. So they got him buried in the backyard. And every day, Lena would get up, roll up the window shade in the kitchen that looked out at the cemetery plot in the backyard and said, Ole, I want you to know I miss you and I love you very much. And throughout the day, she would take a glance through this window, and in the evening, before she would go to bed and pull down the shade, she said, again, Ole, I just want you to know that I still miss you and love you very much. Good night. Well, along comes Jens, a long family friend, a widower. He knew about Ole in the backyard, and he comes over for dinner a couple of times, and they start to court. And then Jens, after a couple of years of visiting and courting, asks Lena to be his wife. And she consents. She says yes. They get married and they have their reception in this house, the very big house that Ole and Lena had. And after all of the guests have gone and Lena is cleaning up the last bit of the dishes and stuff, and Jens is kind of in the living room straightening out. She, before she goes to bed, she says, again, Ole, I want you to know I miss you and I love you very much. Good night. They go to bed and she comes up, gets up in the next morning and is making breakfast, and she rolls up the window shade and she looks out and she says, Ole, I have one thing to say to you.
Especially if they weren't trained labor. So they said, they checked him at the border. So Sven goes across the border and he says, they say to him, what do you do? And he says, oh, I'm a pilot. And they say, oh, fine, come on in. And then the next guy, Jens, comes in. That's Ole's friend, Sven and Ole's friend. And they say, what do you do? And he says, oh, I'm a pilot. And they say, oh, good, come on in. And then Ole comes across the border. And they say, Ole, what do you do? And he says, I'm a wood chopper. And they said, well, you can't come into here if you're a wood chopper. And he says, well, you let my other two buddies come in. And they said, yes, that was fine. They were trained. And he says, well, I chop it and they pilot.
Bishop died and went up to the pearly gates, and there was St. Peter. And the bishop walked up and said, very devout bishop, very dedicated, you know, always had that goal of dying and going to heaven. Walks up to the pearly gates, and there's St. Peter. And sort of swells up in front of St. Peter, sort of to announce himself. St. Peter sort of acknowledges Sven with a nod and says, go to the back of the bishop's line. And the bishop is a little taken back by this, but heads over and waiting in line. Waited in line for about an hour, really wasn't moving. Went back and sort of, he was a relatively important bishop, so he was pushing St. Peter a little bit and said, hey, I've worked for the church my whole life. I'm, you know, sort of expected a little better. And St. Peter said, you have to get in the back of the line, the bishop's line. So he went back and he waited and waited and waited. About 2 hours later, he's looking and along comes this bishop, just decked out, wearing all of the robes, and walks right up to St. Peter, and St. Peter just sort of moves out of the way, and the bishop goes right into heaven. Well, the first bishop was a little upset and came storming back up to St. Peter and said, what's the deal? I've been standing in line for 3 hours, and here you let this other bishop go right in. St. Peter said, well, that's really not a bishop. That's God. He just thinks he's a bishop.
Preachers that were taken up into heaven, and however, St. Peter let a taxi driver in first. And they said, well, why did you put the taxi driver above three notches and let him first before us? Because we have done all this good work here on earth. And St. Peter said, well, he scared the hell out of more people than all three of them put together.
I think it's bad that we're picking on the Norwegians like this.
The bishop is German.
Well, he's a German. But in Seattle, there's a, and probably in some of the, in Midwest towns too, there are, you have retirement homes where older people are living. But in Seattle, there's one called the Norris Home. And it's a nice building, 6 stories high, and has a nice entry. People will sit in that entry, and then it has an elevator and a nice grass lawn. Up in the top floor, well, I'll tell you the scene. There's a, in this entry, this is the only place where people can smoke in the building. So Sven and Oscar was sitting there one afternoon, and Alfreda was upstairs in her bedroom upstairs, and she was really upset. She said, I'm so bored. And so she said, I think I'll streak. Well, and she goes into her, takes her clothes off and goes into the closet and gets her bathrobe, and then she gets into the elevator, goes down the elevator and comes out and marches out through the entryway. And she's going out through the entryway, and there's swinging doors. And there's a big grass lawn there. And as she goes out, Sven turns to Oscar and he says, who in the room was that? Well, I think it was Alfreda. Well, and then meanwhile, Alfreda streaks it across the lawn. And then he says, what in the world is she doing? Well, I don't know. She ran the, oh, my goodness. What was she wearing? Oh, well, I don't know, but I think she should have ironed it first.
Brethren, I've got some good news and some bad news. said, "The good news is that our Lord Jesus Christ just called me on the telephone. He's back here on Earth. The millennium has started." And they all cheered and threw their hats up in the air. They're very happy. And the Pope pounds his staff to the floor and says, "The bad news is he was calling me from Salt Lake City."
But certainly don't feel limited to just straight jokes. If you have a humorous situation that you've run into or whatever, stuff that has made you laugh or that can make others laugh, we're talking about enjoying. So, but that's other options too. How about back here?
I've got to use some visuals. If you don't see it, you can't appreciate it. So everybody under the easel and see it. This is an interesting person. No Scandinavians, Catholics, or whatever. This is an interesting person. This guy was in a doctor's office, so he had to go in. He had some problems. And before they started the exam, the doctor says, "Well, I've got just a few real simple questions for you before we get started, just for my charts." And he goes, "Okay, fine." He goes, "First thing, how tall are you?" And the guy goes, "Well, I'm..." "I'm 5'11". Doctor goes, "Okay." And he goes, "Okay, second question, how old are you?" That goes on. "I'm 31. Doctor goes, "Okay. Last question, this is really simple. What's your first name?" And the guy goes, "Okay." "It's Roger." I goes, wait a minute. He says, "I can go with this, you know, unscientific as it is. We've got a chart over here, we can check you, but that, you look about 5'11". I can even go with this, but where do you get off saying,
Roger?" "Happy birthday."
"Happy birthday."
Swedes always deserve a little more time. Harley Swigum, the author of the Bethel series, tells a story about the Swedes that some of you may have heard if you've been connected with the Bethel series. I think it's one of the greatest I've ever heard. This old Swede wanted to cash his check. And so he went into town. And he made the mistake at first of walking into the Norwegian bank. And he walked up to the teller's cage, and here behind the bars was this pretty little girl. So he waved his check in front of her and said, "I want to cash my check." And the teller said, "Yes, sir, we'll be very happy to cash your check for you now." And she turned it over and she said, "If you'll just sign your name here on the back, we'll be glad to cash it." And Sven said, "I don't want to sign anything. I just want to get my money." And the teller said, "Well, I'm sorry, sir, but you have to sign your check. It's called endorsing it, if you want us to cash it." He says, "I don't want to sign anything. Just give me my money." And the teller said, "Well, I'm very sorry, but if you won't sign here, we can't cash it for you. There's no way." So he grabbed his check and he stomped out of the bank and across the street and walked into the Swede bank and up to the teller. This time it was a man behind the cage. And he laid down his check and he says, "I want to cash my check." And the teller said, "All right, sir, if you'll just sign here on the back side, we'll be glad to give you your money." And right away he says, "I don't want to sign anything, just give me my money." And the teller didn't say a word, but he just reached through the bars of the cage and took hold of his lapels and banged his head through the bars. And he said, "Now, you sign right here." "Okay, okay." So he signs the check and gets his money, you know, and he takes his cash and goes dancing out of the bank, and he went right back across the street and into the Norwegian bank and ran up to the teller and waved the cash in front of her and said, "See here, I got my money." She said, "That's wonderful. How did you do it?" He said, "Oh, over there, they explained things."
Tom Duda and his friend Fred Bobo were going fishing one day. So they went out to the lake and they were fishing, and a big storm came up and their boat overturned, and Fred swam to shore, but he never found Tom, and he called the emergency crew and the sheriff and everybody, and they found Tom. He had drowned. They didn't know quite what to do, so Fred and the sheriff decided that on the way to Tom's house to tell his wife, they'd pick up their minister. So they picked up the minister and they explained it to the minister on the way over to the house, and the minister said, "No problem, we took a course in seminary on how to explain these things." So they sent the minister up to the door to give the news to the wife. He rang the doorbell and the wife answered the door, and the minister said, "Guess who drowned in the lake today?"
Playing cards and smoking cigarettes and cigars. He turns to St. Peter and he says, "Well, who are these people?" St. Peter says, "Oh, they're the Baptists. They couldn't do this on earth, and this is heaven to them." So then St. Peter takes him to another room. He walks into another room, kind of peers in, and all of a sudden he sees all these people having a wild time, dancing and drinking up a storm. He says, "Well, who are these people?" St. Peter says, "Oh, they're the Methodists. They couldn't do this on earth, and this is heaven to them." So finally, St. Peter takes him to a third room, walks in slowly, and he sees all these people very sedately, quietly rocking back and forth on rocking chairs. He says, "Well, who are these people?" St. Peter says to him, "Oh, they're the Lutherans. They've done it all already, and they're just resting."
Same tour. They're going around, looking at all these rooms, and after they're finished, they're going up in the elevator with St. Peter. And as they're going up, they get to the fourth floor, and St. Peter says, "Shh, please be quiet." "How come?" "On this floor, there's the Lutherans, and they think they're the only ones here."
There was this man who had been a loner all his life. He had no family and a few friends, and his whole point in life was making money and being successful in business. But he had one very precious friend, and that was his dog. And no church connections at all, but when his dog died, he felt he should have a funeral. So he went to the Lutheran minister and said, "Well, I just can't bury my dog the way most people do. I have to have a funeral." And the Lutheran minister said, "Oh, we couldn't do that. We don't have funerals for animals." And the man said, "Well, I just have to have a funeral." So the man said, "Well, maybe you could tell me someone who would do this for us." And the Lutheran minister said, "Well, these Baptists down the street, they'll do most anything." And the man said, "Maybe they'll preach a funeral for you." And the man said, "Well, I'm just so grateful. I'll try that." And he said, "How much do you think I should give them?" "I was thinking of $100. And the Lutheran minister said, "Oh, I didn't know your dog was Luther."
When I came back from internship, I was comparing notes with some other classmates. And my friend who had interned in Washington, D.C. talked about what happened to a previous intern there. He said the intern arrived late on Sunday morning to a service because he had taken his cast-up and surplus.
home to wash them. They were notoriously clean when they're washed. And so we just brought them and put them on quickly, and long ago the pastor started processional up the aisle. And just as he started up, the one usher grabbed a sock off the back of the cabin. But just as he arrived at the altar, his wife's panties fell out.
they were surplus?
And as you probably know, there was a lot of the Christians were made slaves by the Romans, and they were sent to work in the mines. Some of them went to households and worked there. And this particular group was sent to work on the Roman galleys. I don't know if you know what the Roman galleys are, but they're the sailing vessels of ancient Rome, and they had a mast on which they could take advantage of wind, but they also had a bunch of oarsmen which rowed the thing around, and they weren't treated all that well, nor were they fed that well. And there was a man in the back of the boat, and he beat on a drum so they would all row in unison. So this man stood up one day and he said, "Men, I've got some good news and some bad news. First, the good news, we're having steak for dinner. And now the bad news, this afternoon the captain wants to go water skiing."
Bad news.
Okay.
Follow up. It's World War I, and it's at the worst part of the time, and in the trenches, the Germans are in there, and it's, you know, it's been pure hell for weeks and weeks and weeks. Just mud, rain, gas, you know, just war at its worst. And so the German sergeant comes up and he said, "Men, I have good news and I have bad news." The good news is, today, we all change underwear!" And a big roar, a big cheer comes up from the men because they are just so enthralled and thrilled and grateful and everything like that. And now the bad news, Oscar, you change with...
reigned by a king named Stanley. Stanley was loved by everyone. There were no rules, there were no laws. Relatively to the time, people worked when they wanted. They had everything they needed. And everybody just loved Stanley. But Stanley had one odd feature to him, and that was the fact that he loved animals. And whenever he could, he would add more animals to his kingdom. He had giraffe and elephants and deer and just anything you could imagine. And for, you know, the first few years it was all right. After a while it started to get in the way. The animals made quite a mess, and it was really making a problem with the people walking around, and these animals started eating all of the crops, and times weren't as great, and the people were starting to get a little disgruntled with Stanley. And they petitioned him to get rid of all the game that was wandering around the field, or at least to bring it down. Well, Stanley didn't hear of it. And this went on for more years, and finally they just lynched Stanley, and thus ended his reign. And the significant thing about this was that this little saga went down in history as the only reign being called in the count of game.
What up here?
There are two ditch diggers in the ditch, and it was really sunny out and really hot, and there are a bunch of trees up on the other side of the road, the supervisor had a glass of lemonade, and he got paid more for just sitting up there and drinking lemonade. So the one ditch digger said to the other ditch digger, why does he get more money? And the other ditch digger said, well, why don't you go up and ask him? So the guy climbed out of the ditch and went up there and said, how come you get more money for sitting up here and drinking lemonade while we break our backs in the ditch? The supervisor said, intelligence. And the ditch digger said, well, what's intelligence? And the guy put his hand up against the tree and said, well, hit my hand as hard as you can. So the guy wound up and took a swing at it, and the guy moved his hand, he plowed his hand into the tree. He said, that's intelligence. And he said, okay. So he went back down the ditch and said, well, the supervisor said intelligence. The other ditch digger said, well, what's intelligence? The guy put a shovel in front of his face and said,
there was a druggist who noticed a young man that was around the different boxes of candies, and he eventually came up to the register and he had a 1 pound, 2 pound, 3 pound box of candy. And so the druggist said, young man, I can save you some money, just get the 6 pound box over there, it's a lot cheaper. And the young guy said, no, he said, that's all right. He says, you see, I got this girl that I want to take out. And he says, on our first date, if she lets me walk her to the door, I'll give her the 1 pound box. And on the second date, if she gives me a little kiss, I'll give her the 2 pound box. And on the third date, then the druggist says, wait, I got the idea, it's okay, you know, give me your money. So the young man bought the boxes of candy. And that evening, he went to the house of the girl to pick her up. And she said, oh, I have been trying to get a hold of you. She says, there's been a change of plans. My folks want to meet you and they want to have us spend some time with them, have dinner with them. So, I mean, what's he going to do? He says, okay, fine. So they get to the dinner table and the father says, young man, why don't you say the grace? So the boy says, the longest, most devout, most reverent grace that's ever been said. And when it was all over, the girl kind of nudged him. She said, you told me you were so religious. And the boy nudged her back and said, you never told me your father was a druggist.
She met a couple of friends there, and they stayed good friends, and then so the Olympics came along. And so Ole invited them to go to the Olympics with them. And so they got to the front gate, and the gatekeeper informed them that all the seats were filled. And so the first guy goes over, now wait a minute, I got an idea. He goes over to the junkyard across the street, picks up a hug pack, goes up to the gatekeeper and says, my name is Joe, Discus. So the guy lets him in. The second guy gets the idea, goes up to the junkyard, gets a length of pipe, comes back and says, the name is Smith, pole vault. And so by that time, Ollie gets the idea, goes over to the junkyard, gets a roll of barbed wire, comes back and says, my name is Ollie, fancy.
All day, but they did finally decide the plan. They decided they'd go into a clearing and old Ole was going to go up on one side, then go up on the other. So they said, okay, when we get across, if we see anything, they'll shoot it, okay? And they come out the other side. Well, they go up the clearing and all of a sudden, off at the top of Yosemite's peak, here comes Don Henley. Well, they never seen anything like that in their lives. And up there, Smith. I've never seen anything like that. He gets out his gun, blah, 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 blah. off the boards the hang glider. Of course, the man's fallen down into the clearing. Oh, holds his head up. Sven, did you get him? Sven pulls up. No, but I got him to drop the man.
Oh, when you went to the Olympics and there was a woman sitting there and she said, are you a pole vaulter? And he said, no, I'm Norwegian and my name ain't Walter.
Had a call to another church, so he was preaching his farewell sermon. And after the service was over, he was standing at the door greeting and saying goodbye, greeting everyone, saying goodbye to them. And a little old lady came up and she was crying just for all she was worth. And the pastor says, don't cry, Hilda. You know, you'll get another pastor and he'll be better than I was. And she says, yeah, that's what they all say, but each one gets worse.
I see one left, and I got one behind the piano.
Okay, I'd like to sing you a little song about the dinner we had tonight. There once was a little Dutchman, his name was John Quebec. He was a dealer in sausages and sauerkraut and speck. One day he invented the sausage machine. And all the neighbors' cats and dogs were never more be seen. One night the darn thing busted and the darn thing wouldn't go. And that night his wife was having a nightmare. Oh, wait a minute. One night the darn thing busted and the darn thing wouldn't go. So John Quebec climbed inside to see what made it so. That night his wife was having a nightmare and she was walking in a seat. She gave the thing a heck of a crank and John Quebec was meat. Well, Mr. John Quebec, how could you be so mean? We told you to be sorry for inventing that machine. And all the neighbors' cats and dogs will never more be seen. They'll all be ground as sausages in John Quebec's machine.
Oh, a visual.
Not a visual.
A visual.
Guy goes hunting and comes driving along and can't find a place to hunt. He sees this woods marked, no trespassing, looks around, no one's there. Gets out of his car, hops into the woods. Finds his deer, shoots it, puts his gun over one shoulder, deer over the other shoulder, and comes traipsing back out of the woods. He gets out of the woods, and there's a game warden standing by his car. Game warden said, what's that you have on your shoulder? He says, well, it's my gun. He says, no, your other shoulder.
We have a follow-up request on that one.
Sven and Ollie were out deer hunting, and accidentally, in one situation, Sven's gun went off and shot Ollie. He wasn't dead, so I figured I'd better get him into the hospital, rushed him into the hospital. Immediately, they took him into surgery, worked on him. About an hour later, the doctor came out and said, well, Sven, I'm sorry, Ollie's dead. And Sven said, well, that's too bad. And the doctor said, you know, we might have been able to save him if you wouldn't have dressed him out first.
And so they went hunting and they both got good sized moose, you know, just real nice moose. And the bush pilot came back to pick them up a couple of days later, and there they were with their big haunches of moose meat sitting on the dock waiting for him. And he looked things over and he said, well, I just don't see any way I can get all of this out in one trip. We're going to have to take two trips and you guys will just have to pay the extra cost. And Sven and Ole said, oh, no, we did this last year. We both got moose bigger than this. And we got out and the pilot, he was real good and he got us out and no problem. He just wanted our money and they started getting all upset. So the pilot, you know, kind of said, well, okay, we'll try it if you're really insisting on it. And so he loaded them all up and they started taxiing, and they finally got off right at the end of the lake and they lifted up just above the trees and they went a little ways and the plane just went poof and crashed down into the mountainside. And they all kind of crawled out of the wreckage and they were dusting themselves off and looking around, and Sven says, how far did, or... Sven looks at Ole and says, well, Ole, we didn't make it. How far did we get? And Ole looks at him and says, oh, about 100 yards farther than last year.
Well, once upon a time there was this surveying team that figured out that the line between Kansas and Nebraska wasn't defined too well, and they would have to resurvey the land. So that's what they did, and there was this family that lived in Nebraska, very close to this line, and they had lived there for years and years and years. And so these surveyors knew that they would have to go to these people and tell them that they didn't live in Nebraska anymore, they lived in Kansas. And I thought, well, how are we going to tell these people? I mean, they've just lived there all their lives. So they finally picked one of them that had to go tell these people the sad tale. So he went and said, I'm really sorry to tell you that we had to resurvey the line here, and that you folks don't live in Nebraska, you really live in Kansas. And he was really worried about how they would react, and they were sitting there kind of smiling, and they just smiled and started sort of dancing up and down. He said, well, gee, I don't understand. How come you're so happy that I told you this news? And they said, oh, we won't have to go through another one of those Nebraska winters.
Fritz and Hilda had just gone to sleep. No, we're sound asleep for a long time. It's about 2 in the morning and the phone rang. Fritz got out of bed, dragged himself to the phone, picked up the phone, listened a minute. Got real mad and hung it up and went back to bed. Fell asleep for another 2 hours or so and the phone rang again. So he dragged himself to the phone, hello? Listen, says, how should I know? Hung up the phone, back to bed. Then it was another hour before he woke up again when the phone rang. This time he went to the phone, hello? Silence for a minute. Then he said, who do you think I am anyway? We live out here in Pennsylvania. I don't know what you're talking about. Hung up the phone. We went back to bed. His wife said, what in the world was all that about? Oh, he says, somebody thinks I'm a weatherman. She said, what do you mean? He keeps asking if the coast is clear.
Saturday morning, so they got out there right and early at 10 o'clock and they teed off and they played about 6 holes and the next hole was right alongside of the highway and it was Pat's turn to tee off and all of a sudden a funeral procession went by and Pat, he stopped and bowed his head. Mike said, I didn't know you were religious. She said, I'm not, that was my wife.
And then, well, it seems that these three guys were going to be shot at sunrise. And,
at least any particular reason?
No, no reason, no nationality. And they were going to be shot one at a time. And they were kind of nervous. They really didn't know what, how to get out of this thing. Well, first guy goes up there, and the captain says, ready, aim. And the guy goes, earthquake! And it, the people, the guns, they threw it down and he escapes. Second guy, so he gets up there and the guy goes, ready, aim, tornado, and he escapes. The third guy says, oh, no problem. The guy says, ready, aim, fire.
Can groaners be therapy too?
Many of us know that there's a llama in the village. Well, this is a joke about a llama, or llamas. A 1L llama is a religious man from Tibet. And a 2L llama is a pack animal from South America. What is a 3L llama? A big fire in New York City.
Jesus and Moses were playing golf. And they started out, Moses started out and he hit a real hard ball. There was water between the green and where they started. And what happened, Moses hit the ball, it came to the water, it was right along the ground, it came to the water, and the water split apart. The ball went on the dry ground and went up into the green. Jesus said, great shot, Moses. That's incredible. Great shot. And Jesus said, I'll go ahead and start it. So Jesus went ahead and started. And he hit the ball. It was right along the ground, too. Came to the water. Went right over the top, up under the green. There was another man watching. He said, boy, you guys have a great shot. I'm just impressed. You might as well join you. I'm just by myself. Can I join you? And so he did. And he started out and hit the ball. Really hit a hard one. And only went about 10 feet, rolled along, and was about ready to stop. All of a sudden, a squirrel came down and grabbed the ball, started running away. All of a sudden, an eagle came down and grabbed the squirrel, picked the squirrel up with the ball in its claws, and carried it off. As the squirrel was wiggling or whirling around, it dropped the ball right on the green. The ball rolled into the hole, a hole in one. Jesus turns around and says, hey, Dad, great shot.
Well, David came home from the bookstore the other day with a frog on his head. And I said, what happened? And the frog said, I don't know, I started out with a wart on my butt.
David, you didn't appreciate being the butt of that joke? We have one then?
Yes.
Is this a visual?
No.
Oh, okay.
The Swedes are trying to measure their flagpole, and they only have one little measuring stick. And so what they decide to do is stand on each other's shoulders and then pass the measuring stick up. And they're trying to get the third person on the second man's shoulders, and this Norwegian walks by and says, what are you Swedes trying to do? He says, well, I'm trying to measure this flagpole so we can buy a new rope. And he says, okay, well, I've got an easy way. He pulls out his wrench and he unbolts the bolts on the bottom of the flagpole and lays the flagpole down. And he takes out his yo-yo and he measures the flagpole and he says, it's 15 feet high, 8 inches. Puts it back up, puts the bolt back on, and walks away. Dumb Swedes. The Swedes look at the Norwegian and say, that dumb Norwegian, he didn't measure the height, he measured the width.
We're starting on time.
one.
You've got one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Ole entered the Olympics, and he got a gold medal. He's so happy he had a bronze.
Look quickly, there was a man and a woman at an airport, and the woman was an older woman, and she was trying to sneak her pet onto the plane. She had a pet parrot. She walked up to the gate, and the woman at the flight reservation asked her, smoking or non-smoking, and she said non-smoking, and got her ticket and boarding pass, went out and got on the plane. The next person in line was an older gentleman, and he walked up, and the person at the desk said smoking or non-smoking, and he said smoking. And this was before the days when they regulated you could still smoke cigars on airplanes. So, as luck would have it, when they got on the plane, he had the first seat of the smoking section. She had the last seat of the non-smoking section, so they were right against each other. The plane took off, and he lights up the cigar, and the smoke starts rolling over the seat. At the same time, the parrot starts talking. The parrot bothers the man quite a bit, and the cigar smoke is bothering the woman quite a bit, and an argument arises. And it's getting pretty heated. The flight attendant can't get it solved, and finally the pilot has to come all the way back. And pilots can have a very calming effect, and came up with an agreement between the two. If he would throw his cigar out the window, she would throw the parrot out the window. So they dropped the plane to the proper altitude, opened up the window, threw the parrot and the cigar out the window. Plane's starting to gain altitude again, and all of a sudden, here comes the parrot, flapping along, to landing right on the wing outside the woman's window. And guess what it had in its mouth? The blue brick.
Yeah.
Among yourselves, we've run the course for the evening, but if you want to keep sitting here and telling stories, I'm sure that's fine.
I'll give you a very appropriate one. If Bill here tonight, Bill.
Yeah.
Is Bill here? Well, Bill, you'll appreciate this joke because of what's been happening in your classes with this week, rather. This joke, centers around, or this story really centers around a little church on the West Coast who had just received a new pastor. And as it was a custom in this particular church, the council president and one of his friends, council, would take the new pastor out fishing. Well, guess what? The new pastor was on leave. And so, they decided, even though she was a lady, they'd take her fishing. So that morning they get out, and the pastor and the two councilmen went out to this resort at the lake and proceeded. They got out into the boat, and they were rowing out into the lake. And they were looking, fixing up their tackle and everything. And then one councilman turned to him and said, where's the bait? And, we left it at the dock. And the pastor says, I'll go get it for you. And she jumps out. She walks over the water, and she goes back to the land. And the other councilman looks at the other one. She says, no, it's bad enough that she's a woman. She doesn't know how to swim either.